Welcome back into the Panthers podcast. Max Henson and Brian Strickland here with you as always, and we're here getting ready for week 17 of the NFL season. But first, Brian, I want to ask, how was your Christmas and what did you get?
Well, I got a little bit of heartburn, Max, as a matter of fact, because as it would be typical for me, food was a central part of my day. Delicious waffle-based breakfast to start it off and some Boston butt. I know that doesn't necessarily sound appetizing.
It always makes me smile when you say that.
Familiar, but it's pretty awesome. And, you know, gift-wise, I got a pot, another cooking-related item for my son. Yeah. But, of course, I think the greatest gift of all was the Christmas Eve gift at Bank of America Stadium, where the Panthers took care of business.
Yeah, and it was pretty good for Panther fans to be able to lock up a playoff spot, and it didn't come easy, Brian. I mean, for majority of that game, I think Panther fans were saying, well, going to have to win in Atlanta next week to lock up a playoff spot.
Right.
And in the really the dying moments of that game, Carolina came through. And I don't know about for you, but for me, I always just kind of had the feeling from the press box. It was like somehow
right.
Panthers are going to find a way to pull this one out. I mean, the Tampa Bay, for as well as they played, also made so many big mistakes that, you know, kind of just felt we're going to come back to really haunt them. And ultimately, Cam Newton got the ball back with time left to execute one drive. All they needed was one drive, and that's something Greg Olsen said after the game. As bad as they had been offensively, just unable to string anything together. Didn't have a touchdown drive offensively all day. The only touchdown had come from Demir Bird's 103-yard kick return. All they needed was one, and just kind of had the feeling they would come up with it, and they did.
I agree, Max. I mean, we've seen it the other way, too. Occasionally there are games where you just have a feeling it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And this one, you did feel that way. Maybe it's just because of who the Bucs are and some of the things were happening. The one time self-doubt crept in for me was that Bucs drive when they took over 9 minutes left in the game, and just like fluky stuff kept happening, flags flying,
oh my God, the penalties.
Safety that was wiped out. Then James Bradbury got called for a couple of pass interferences, and it was just like, are they going to run the clock out? Like, are the Panthers actually not going to get the ball back for the last nine minutes? But then Luke Kuechly with a stop behind the line of scrimmage, Darrell Worley with a stop behind the line of scrimmage, and then kind of like one of those blessings in disguise, the Bucs not in field goal range, and they run a safe play on third down to try to get in field goal range, and they're tempted. They've had trouble with their kicking game, notoriously. I mean, for years, honestly. But just close enough where they decide to try a 51-yarder, misses the mark. Panthers finally have the ball back 3 minutes at their own 41, and that's when I was like, they're going to find a way to do this, and they did.
Yeah, and another layer of what made it interesting at that point, too, is Carolina had a PAT blocked.
Right.
So instead of being down three in that situation and needing a field goal just to send it into overtime and, you know, keep extending this game, it was of no use to them.
Right.
To field goal. They had to score a touchdown. They're down 19-15, get the ball back with exactly 3 minutes left. And in those situations, for me, I think just watching enough of these games and how they play out, it seems like in those kind of critical drives where all the pressure is put into that possession, the first play is critical.
Right.
It always just seems like if you have a nice chunk play to start it out, you kind of get yourself rolling a little bit. The belief factor just increases. The defense immediately goes on their heels because you're going fast. You're moving quick to get it back at the line. And so I just thought it was huge that on a first play, 23 yards to Brenton Burson, and then they were going, and then they were on the move, and it just sort of felt like, okay, there, something clicked, and it didn't take very long before all of a sudden they're deep into Tampa Bay territory, and that's when things, of course, got even more interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure you had it chalked up as a Brenton Burson big chunk play to start the drive, right?
That's and I'm sure everybody had Brenton Burson as the leading receiver going into
it. And then Kalen Clay with two key receptions on that drive. I mean, obviously, we'll talk about that. You know, the unfortunate news, Demir Bird was not out there at that time. The Bucs did a really good job taking away Greg Olsen, but the Panthers did a really good job. Cam, specifically, of course, with not forcing it. I mean, definitely going to taking what the defense gave him, even in that situation where it'd be so easy to say, I'm going to force the ball here. I need to get it to the top playmakers. I need to get it to Funchess on the outside. I need to get it, thread it to Greg, whatever. But no, it was Brenton Burson. It was Kalen Clay to get in that position. It was then the fourth, I believe, encroachment call against the Bucs. That's the second straight week.
How strong has Cam's cadence game been these past few weeks?
Yeah,
an underrated element.
Yeah, I've been working with him on it a little bit. Yeah, so it's clearly paying dividends. But that's crazy. I think during the game we were talking like, is he becoming Peyton Manning-esque with that? I mean, two straight games with four of those. And that was a huge one, but it didn't give him a first down.
Yeah, it took a fourth and three at the 5-yard line of Tampa Bay to a fourth and one. And I know there were some people – We didn't realize that that became 4th and 1, assumed right. it was 1st and 10. I'm not going to name names. Maybe, you know, okay, I am. Intern Jared is one right. of them who thought it was 1st and 10.
Yeah.
And, of course, so you're either thinking that this is a 1st and 10 is not too much pressure right. on that play with the amount of time that was left. 4th and 1, however, is a ton of pressure, yeah. especially when Jonathan Stewart rams into a pile and you're really right. not sure where that ball is going
to
be spotted.
Right. Now, I feel like I have a sense for this, Max. I don't know. You can speak to maybe I have a pretty decent track record with this. I happen to be on the sidelines, and I was like, that's a 1st down.
Yeah,
like, it seems ridiculous for me to say that with the pile of humanity that was there. But just like that was a feel. It was a 1st down. It was interesting yesterday. Ron Rivera was asked, I didn't know this, that he said that he was told that some of the Bucs players were arguing that it was a bad, they got a bad spot mm-hmm. there. It was a raw deal. I can tell you on the field, I agreed with him. I thought it was a bad spot for the Panthers. Like, I had no doubt it was
I'm
a
shocked
first.
That you would say that.
Oh, I'm telling you, I had no doubt it was 1st down when he jammed up in there, and then they put the ball down, and I'm like, uh-oh. I was right at the line. And the other thing is, you see it all the time. When they stretch the chains, there's uh-huh. always, like, I don't know quite how that works, but there's always a significant stretch. Like, it doesn't – and I'm like, okay.
I think they make it a little more dramatic, maybe. They want to really give you that,
right.
that
but
moment.
But they hadn't even stretched it yet. It was right there. I was like, oh, crap. Seriously?
I thought it was clear.
You got to break out the index card here to check, you know, that type of
from
thing.
From our view in the press box, I thought, I don't know about this.
Right.
I wasn't sure he got it.
Right.
And you never really know. It was funny, you know, talking to Kalen Clay after the game. He had the big play on 3rd and 10,
right.
where he got 11, and it was a situation there where it was like he told, you know, you don't want to put it in the referee's hands, you
right.
know, you want to make sure you do whatever it takes to get that extra yard or two to cross that line, and then of course a few plays later, it very much is in the referee's hands.
True.
Where are they going to spot this thing? Because you know, this is where the human element comes in. That's not a real reviewable play. You could review that,
right?
But how often in a pile like that do they ever really make a substantial change
oh,
to the spot? They're
exactly.
pretty much going to stick with what those guys decide to do wherever they put that ball down. Fortunately for Carolina Panthers fans, 1st down signal, the drive alive, the game alive for Carolina, and then you've got 1st and goal from the 2-yard line, and it just seemed fitting, right?
Right.
And that on that snap, a perfect shotgun snap to Cam Newton, he drops it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so from field level, Brian, what was your reaction to seeing that?
Yeah, I mean, that happened fast, of course. I mean, going into it, I was like, Cam's going to score here. Like, it might not be this play. I think the Panthers still had one timeout. Didn't the Bucs actually take a timeout, I feel like?
The Bucs took a timeout after the 4th and 1.
Right,
they
right.
They took their 2nd timeout.
Right, there. So I think the Panthers still had a timeout, and I was like, we're going to see Cam here. We're going to see him a couple times if necessary. There's time for that. And then just like in a flash, I mean, that happened so fast. Field level, whatever. Yeah, and yeah, it's a scary moment. The ball's like literally on the ground.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? But, you know, you watch that play. I mean, I'm not going to go like super dramatic and say only Cam Newton can make that play. But how many quarterbacks would have fallen on the ball
yep.
there? Like, I've got to protect it. But he caught it. He picked it up like just as the nose of it was touching the ground. Like, it was kind of scary as you mm-hmm. watch the replay about how easily the ball could have squirted away again.
Yep.
But he picked it up somehow in stride. And, of course, then there's where his lean and his body mm-hmm. size and all that, like, you know, the joke was, oh, they did that on purpose to freeze the defense. I mean, it could have had that effect, though, because
he got
in there pretty
no
easily.
I think there's no doubt. Anytime that ball just suddenly, you know, starts flying around on the ground, I think everybody's, just kind of stops and hesitates. I think, like, everybody watching does the same thing.
Right.
You just have that moment where you just kind of freeze.
Yeah.
But I will say, Brian, they did not have a timeout. They'd used
okay.
the 3rd timeout earlier, but that speaks to your point about had he fallen on it. And this was something I was thinking about after the game, too. I mean, as Cam mentioned, even if they'll say that was a pass play, they're lucky that was a
right.
run play. Because if it's a pass play, the offensive line is going to start tracking backwards. Maybe somebody kicks it.
Right.
The ball is flying
True.
Around. In that case, you have no idea what happens. But let's just say Cam is forced to fall on it with no timeouts left. Now you're scrambling. Because at that point, the snap occurred at 39 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Clock's running. Now there's a little more. You could be at the 4, 5, 6 yard line.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't know how that whole thing plays out. Fortunately for, you know, Panther fans, I don't have to worry about that. Cam picks it up and scores. Game over.
Right.
Well, I shouldn't say game over. Kaywon Short ended the game a few moments later with the 6th sack on Jameis Winston and a fumble that was recovered by Julius Peppers. But still, the point remains that Cam kind of sealed the deal there by just being Cam. I mean, no panic.
Right.
Just poise, picks it up like it was nothing. Into
right.
the end zone, celebrating a huge victory for Carolina to lock up a playoff spot.
Yeah, and celebrating his son's 2nd birthday.
Chosen stole the show.
Chosen was a star. And That was a pretty good one with the lighting of the,
that was good.
The football. That worked well. And you know, post game we got to see Chosen in an entertaining way.
Unbelievable.
Great birthday gift. Tough to have a birthday on Christmas Eve generally, but I think Cam kind of made it up for him a little bit with some things that happened on Sunday.
Yeah, I think Cam posted on like Instagram about that too, just kind of doubling up for Chosen's birthday, Christmas. I mean, they got to make it extra special for him. I think that'll be a pretty – he won't remember this one, I don't think, but hopefully he'll get to see – if Instagram is still a thing whenever Chosen is like old enough to look back on it, yeah. I think he'll get to see a video that now has like 1.5 million views on the Panthers Twitter account of him dancing to Cam's music in the locker room. That was pretty cool.
I don't think there were video cameras when I was 2 years – on my second birthday. There are some grainy photos out there, but somehow Instagram, I don't think Instagram existed.
Were you as cute as Chosen when you were 2 years
more,
old?
More, really.
I don't know about that.
I was precious.
Chosen's pretty cute.
That's a tough call.
Did you see him with his little Cam Newton shoes, too?
I mean, he was... Right, okay.
He was pretty adorable. And the amazing thing is just how, like, immediately when Chosen walked into the press conference room, you just knew. It was like, oh my God, this is gonna be huge. It's like everything we could talk about with the game didn't really matter anymore.
Right,
it was like, look at this adorable kid up there with Cam. You know, like,
yeah, kids have that impact, right? Yeah, I mean, so
let's talk about some other elements of this game that we talked about, like the dramatic ending, and of course that was the story of it. But earlier in the game, you had Damir Bird and his 103-yard kick return touchdown, Brian, and really tough news for Carolina to deal with the fact that his next kick return after that was one that ended his season.
Right.
Suffered a leg injury that landed him on IR. And that's just a really tough one for this Panthers team to take. Without Curtis Samuel, Damir Bird was kind of the next guy who could bring that speed element. And he had really emerged. I mean, you talk about two touchdowns against the Packers.
Right.
Next week, he's over 100 yards on an amazing kick return to help beat the Buccaneers. And his 31-yard catch, we can't forget either, was one that set up another score. So the difficulty of that loss I want to touch on, and, of course, the just amazement of watching that kick return, because we've kind of joked about this for a while. We just haven't seen very many big splash plays in the return game since either of us have been here covering this Panthers team. And now between Kalen Clay earlier and Damir Bird, you've had two spectacular ones.
Yep, you do still have Kalen in the mix, so that's good news. But, great move, amazing shift, change of direction to get free on that. Fozzie Whitaker leading the way in a couple ways with blocking. Now Fozzie, of course, may be returning those kicks. It is unfortunate. What can you do? I mean, I hate to say it that way, too, though. It's a reality in this league. I don't know if you ever heard this or not, Max. You ever heard next man up? Have you ever heard anybody mention that?
I think I may have heard that.
I think it could catch on. Yeah. But, that is a reality. And, I mean, people pointed to Damir Bird coming back from IR, but I think nobody really expected this kind of impact from
him.
I don't think
you could have said. Right. I mean, he's been pretty – it's been pretty amazing how much of an impact he's made. And that's a credit to him, because he's been this guy that we've talked about, how many, preseasons now has it been where it's like everybody's getting super excited about Damir Bird, and then you just never really hear from him during the regular season, just never got his chance. You just feel terrible for him, because now he really does get his chance, and this team is about to go into the postseason with him being a big part of it, and it's taken away, and that's always hard.
So, as far as next thing for the team, I look at Coach Rivera says they're going to kind of go with the people that brought them. I certainly see that. They have a history of success with the next man, I think. It's going to be interesting to me how Russell Shepard responds to the opportunity, because he has had opportunities. I mean, he came to Carolina in the first place with this great reputation on special teams, which he certainly contributed there at times. But, as a potentially emerging receiver and flashes, but, Damir Bird kind of took that role away from him when he came back. So, how does Russell Shepard respond with another chance? Encouraging signs around him. Or, of course, we said the Bucs did a good job against Greg Olsen, but he's clearly back to being, close to himself, coming off the injury. Funches has been quiet for a couple games.
You
still got that. So, I mean, I'm hopeful and, again, think that Russell Shepard can step in there and do the job. But, initially it's a blow.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think bottom line, the Panthers are going to need big-time performances from the guys you mentioned. Olsen, Funchess, McCaffrey. I mean, those guys are going to have to be, focal points going forward. They already have been, but especially so, you're going to need to lean on those guys. The problem here that you can't deny is the – ability or inability to stretch the field, you know, and then that's been the big thing for Carolina all year long. Even going back to the Kelvin trade, was we've got to get more speed on the field.
Right.
We've got to give defenses that thought that they can get beat deep. Demir was that guy, of course. You just put him on the field, and everybody knows, okay, 18 can run.
Right.
We got to watch out for that. Kalen Clay is, of course, that next guy who you say, okay, he's got speed to burn, and that can threaten the team.
Right.
He hasn't really done it in the same way Demir had kind of shown glimpses of, but I think that's the problem Carolina is faced with right now is, okay, they've got these guys that certainly they can lean on, they can move the ball well, running the football, Funchess, Olsen, McCaffrey, kind of good possession guys. They haven't really seen too many chunk plays from any of those guys, so it's where's the explosiveness
going to come from.
I agree, Russell Shepard can certainly step in. I think he's the guy that can kind of fill in and much needed after he missed last week's game with a shoulder injury, but that's going to be the thing for Carolina is, can they create explosive plays down the field? Are they going to have enough speed out there to really threaten the defense?
And, I mean, you know, Russell Shepard's pretty fast, actually, but we haven't, you know, seen it, you know, in a way where it feels like he's stretching the defense. I mean, you know, Kalen Clay, I mean, could he ascend the way Bird has the last couple of weeks? I mean, I think it's possible, you know, in the preseason, we think he made the roster with what he did in the last preseason
game. There were some big plays down the field in the preseason,
Right, and, of course, the punt return, you know, you referenced that earlier that he had in New York. So he's got that potential. He's become a better receiver, you know, maybe not a consistent receiver. But have we said anything about consistency with Demir Bird until maybe the Packers game? So it could happen. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And one other thing I wanted to talk about, special teams related. I couldn't get out of the show without mentioning the first fake punt of the Ron Rivera era.
Yeah.
I mean, we had to talk about this one. Didn't go exactly how they drew it up, but it was effective in that it allowed the offense to get back on the field and keep the drive going. But I just got to tell you, the excitement of seeing Michael Pilardi rear back to throw. There's something amazing about a fake field goal or a fake punt. It's just so, I don't know. There's something that's just so fun about it because I've just been waiting a long time to see maybe Carolina pull that out of the bag of tricks. You know, teams practice that stuff all the time. They've got it, but we've just never seen them pull it out. And with Pilardi's background as a quarterback in high school, it was kind of, man, are we gonna see him get a chance to do it? And we did on Sunday.
Yeah, Max, and you know, you being a Wisconsin guy, when Brad Nortman was here for 4 years, like almost every time in that situation, you're like, is this the time? Because didn't he have a great?
Brad had a history of a couple. You know, he had a couple of really nice fake punts in his Wisconsin days. So he had shown, he'd put on tape that was something he was capable of. We never got to see him do that in Carolina.
And I think he did it with the Jags this year.
I think he did.
Right?
You're right.
So it was just a matter of time. I mean, I loved the confidence Pilardi showed like uncorking that pass that was, you know, not completed. I mean, it was, you know, and Cam's answer to what he thought about him as a quarterback afterwards, what do you know? Well, he's left-handed. That was his response. So, I thought it was a good call, though, so to speak. You know,
Panthers needed it, right? Yeah, they needed something, you know?
Right. There was no, you know, there was somewhat of a listlessness. The Christmas spirit had not overtaken the team. And, you know, Coach Rivera kind of broke down the why. It was that. The team needs a shot in the arm. We need to, you know, energize the team somehow, slash confidence in his defense that, hey, even if it doesn't work out, they're not letting the Bucs in the end zone. Like, the Bucs were moving the ball, but the red zone defense was strong again. And the Panthers did end up getting a field goal out of that. And what did they win the game by? I think it was by a field goal. So.
They did? Yeah, no, it was an important play. And, you know, Pilardi was looking for Ed Dixon. I think it worked, the play. It, you know, they drew a blatant pass interference call. I mean, it would have been a bit of a cooler moment for Pilardi had that been, you know, completed.
Right.
And he would have been able to kind of waltz back to the sideline after going 1-for-1 on the day.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have been a little cooler, but still, job done.
Yeah, so did he go through his progressions? I thought I read somewhere that he looked for Colin Jones first, which would have been awesome.
Yeah, so I guess Dixon wasn't even the primary read, so he deserves some credit for, scanning the field and finding the open receiver.
Right,
so.
How about Colin Jones filling in for the speed element on offense? Should we try that?
Hey, I mean, we know that guy can run.
That's right.
But speaking of Colin Jones, who's been playing pretty darn well on defense as of late, and they've kind of needed him to step in. What about that defense, Brian? We haven't really spent any time talking about the defensive effort. Jameis Winston played really well.
Right.
I think his passer rating was 130-something, second best of his career. This is a banged-up Bucs team that really fought hard, and I think we all expected that. Everybody who was saying that, you know, easy win for the Panthers. I mean, we just know this league well enough to realize that this was going to be a bit of a dogfight. The Panthers knew it too, and it was largely because of how well the Bucs offense played. But six sacks from Carolina and some forced fumbles that were huge throughout the day. To start it off, you had Wes Horton, a guy who always seems to manage to get strip sacks when he gets the quarterback, and that led to some early points for Carolina. And then late, of course, as we mentioned, Kaywon Short with the strip sack that kind of sealed it. But again, more pressure coming from up front, and that's really been, as we've said all year, the key to success for Carolina.
Yeah, defense. I think you summed it up pretty well there as far as the positives. The pass rush continuing to be a concern for opponents, with the Panthers putting pressure on. Takeaways, you know, have been much better in the second half of the season. You know, kind of red zone defense I mentioned before, holding the opponent to field goals, obviously huge going forward as well. You know, then the negative concern area would be what you mentioned about, you know, Winston's passer rating. I mean, he was on fire. I mean, a bunch of big chunk plays for, you know, from some receivers, honestly, that we don't know much about.
On third down.
Yeah.
That was the thing, too. It just seemed like, man, every third down, even the third and mediums and third and longs,
right,
they were converting at a high rate.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's, but again, learning in while winning is always huge. And, you know, we've talked about it before. You know, this team is great at adjusting and being better the next week when they have a deficiency the previous week. And certainly that secondary group will be challenged in Atlanta with that Julio Jones character down there.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah. So, but, you know, also this team has a history of getting after Matt Ryan. I mean, there's something about these division games. I don't know. I mean, both the fact that they're always competitive no matter what's on the line, and that familiarity, like the Panthers, especially when it comes to Matt Ryan and Jameis Winston, really seem to get after the quarterback, maybe even above an average game for them. And, you know, you get Charles Johnson back eligible to play, Thomas Davis back from his one game out. Those Georgia guys, they love to go down there, not to the Georgia Dome this time, Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yep.
So keep your Mercedes-Benz sponsorship names clear with the Mercedes-Benz Superdome as well. I mean, I guess I'm transitioning into this week's game.
It's a big game this week, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, big game. Obviously, the Panthers clinched a playoff spot, but the NFC South division is still up for grabs between them and the Saints. The Saints are at the Buccaneers. Both games got moved to the 4:25 slot, so the Saints and Panthers would both be on the field at the same time. It wouldn't be a situation where the Panthers or Saints would kind of know before they stepped onto the field what the fate of the division would be. But, Brian, there's still a lot of talk about Carolina's mindset going into this. And, you know, Ron was asked about the fact, are all the starters going to be playing in Week 17? Any thought to kind of be resting some guys or preparing for the playoffs in that way? You know, Ron's answer was the best way to prepare for the playoffs is to continue with as much momentum as we can.
Right.
He wants to win this football game, wants all his guys out there to do just that, to beat the Falcons. What do you think of just about the way this sets up for Carolina with all the playoff implications and scenarios as far as they could be anywhere from the 2 seed to the 5 seed in the NFC?
Right.
There's a lot of things that need to happen for that to take place, of course. But I think Panther fans kind of have a little bit of a mixed take on kind of what they – you know, would like to see from this Panthers team Sunday.
I think that's definitely the message you want to give the team, and quite possibly that will be the approach till the final gun ends the regular season. You have to have that mindset going into the game because of the things that are up for grabs. I mean, when we kick off at 4:25, the only thing that could be known is if the Vikings beat the Bears in the 1 o'clock window, the 2 seed and a bye is out the window. You would eliminate that if that happened. But everything else would be up for grabs as far as, you know, still hosting a wild card game. That's still possible as a 3 seed, as a 4 seed. So anyway, but part of my point is that you go in with that mindset because it is an important game on the surface as far as seeding is concerned. And, I mean, you don't want to go into a game with, like, 1 foot in, like, kind of, you know, half in, so to speak. That seems to me like that's when people get hurt. Like, if you go into the game thinking, oh, you know, we want to win this game, but, hey, we don't want to get hurt, you know, versus just – playing your game. And you know, maybe there's a moment in the game, but I don't even think this is going to happen, a moment where the scoreboard shows that the Saints are up by 20 over the Buccaneers, and maybe you rethink things. But I think it's probably doubtful. I think they'll be all in for it. And again, I think that's a good mindset for the team, for momentum, and also, like, you know, again, maybe I'm overstating it, but I think, you know, from a health perspective, it's just better to kind of be like, hey, we're playing to win this game, we're playing to not get hurt.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, to go in with a division not yet settled, of course, every team sets out at the start of the year, they want to be division champs. And that's still a possibility for Carolina. I know it seems very unlikely right now that the Saints would lose down in Tampa Bay. But as we just saw here last week when Tampa Bay came in, I mean, that team is playing really tough. You don't know what's going to happen. And for this Panthers team, that's an opportunity to perhaps win the division still.
Right.
And I think that's motivation enough to
go
out and play this game absolutely to win it. Now, from the Falcons' perspective, it's a little more clear for them.
Right,
I mean, they have not secured a playoff spot.
Correct.
They need to win to secure one, or they could get in with a ton of help.
Yeah.
Correct?
Well, I mean, it's one game, but it is, again, a team that you wouldn't expect to lose in this spot. It's the Seahawks at home against the Cardinals. I mean, the Cardinals are playing better. The Seahawks are 10-point favorites. I'm just looking here now.
Right.
So that's the situation. Win, you're in Atlanta. Lose, you're out if the Seahawks win.
Okay, so maybe not a ton of help. They would just need the Seahawks to lose if they were to lose to the Panthers. But I think the point remains for the Falcons' perspective. It's win and get ourselves into the playoffs.
Right.
So sets up what has always been an intriguing game between the Panthers and Falcons in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Obviously, the venue is a little bit different this time around, Brian.
Right.
Before we came in to do this show, we were just kind of talking through the past few years, really ever since I came here to start covering this team in 2012, and really ever since all those games have really stood out for one reason or another.
Right.
There's been some really big highs for Carolina. There's also been some really low lows for Carolina during that series. But I mean, we start all the way back in 2012. My first year, you had the collapse late against Atlanta when Matt Ryan hooks up with Roddy White over Haruki Nakamura. What was that on? That was a fourth down play?
No, it was just that they were backed up.
They were just backed up.
I think it may have been first down, and they're like, they're two because the Panthers decided not to go for a fourth and short. Punted, and you did
a
great job downing the ball, and it was almost like a Hail Mary with 45 seconds on the clock. It's kind of what it seemed
like.
I mean, and I remember for me in that, you know, we got to get, for some reason you weren't by my side. I don't remember the details, but like
that's hard for you.
I know it's scary. It's scary, right? But we have to get down before the game's over on those road games because we got to get, you know, it's not worth telling all the details. But we're usually down on the field for the end of the game. But I was like in the tunnel, like in the back, and, you know, assuming, hey, the Panthers have got this. And then I just heard this crazy roar coming
from the field.
And like, what could that possibly mean? You know, I ducked into a side room where there was a TV as quick as I could. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
So. Yeah, so 2012 was one of those lows we were talking about. The Falcons, of course, came back to win that game, and that really – that was a gut punch to Carolina's season that year. It took a while for them to kind of recover from that. 2013, though, one of those highs we mentioned. Panthers finished that year 12-4. To get that 12th win, it was a 21-20 victory over the Falcons. That gave them the NFC South title. It was between them and the Saints at that point.
Yeah.
Nine sacks against them. Aaron, you talked about this before,
just
kind of the pressure they put on these NFC South quarterbacks.
Right, nine sacks. I feel like the last three, maybe even four plays were sacks. Like, the similar situation, the Falcons got the ball with just a little bit of time left, and that thought's still kind of fresh in your mind what happened the previous year. It's like sack, and ball game, and they're celebrating the title.
Yeah.
And then, you know, every year's been notable, really, in that stretch. You look at, you know, the next year, maybe even more important because it kind of – that game was for the division title.
Winner takes the division between the Falcons and Panthers.
In that unlikely year where four 8-1 Panthers team ended up in the playoffs, followed up a six-game losing streak with four straight wins. And that was a dominant performance and a fun day. I mean, it was just hard to believe this team was
–
it was 3-8-1. I'm sorry, 3-8-1 to 7-8-1.
Yep.
Capping it with – I think it was 34-3.
34-3. You had a couple pick sixes in that game, and it was just a route. The Panthers put it on the Falcons in that one to take the division and go on into the postseason. 2015, notable for a not great reason for Carolina. Obviously, they were undefeated that incredible season, but the undefeated run came to an end against the Falcons.
Yeah.
Perfect season being ruined there by their division rivals.
At 14-0, I think. We could almost smell that undefeated record. And
it got so close.
Yeah, and that happened. And then You know, last year was the Julio Jones game. 300
yards? 300
yards.
Yeah. It's still just seeing that. And I just like writing that down was like, yeah, Julio for 300.
Right.
I mean, that was an incredible individual performance, obviously at the Panthers' expense. Yeah. But yeah, to sum up all of that, just a lot going on down in that matchup between these two teams in Atlanta, and this sets up this year for another one that's going to have some dramatics with what's on the line for.
Yeah, the Georgia Dome closed it out. I mean, that's five pretty amazing games with like different things on the line or remarkable individual feats happening in those games. Now we segue to Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I don't know if you've heard about this, Max, the concessions at Mercedes-Benz, they're like free. I think the food's free. Is that what it is? No. They have like crazy low prices, I guess.
That's right,
for the food
yes.
there, but I don't know. I like the press box food at the Georgia
Dome.
I wonder if they're going to transfer that over to the press box.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see kind of how that carries over, if it does at all. If it's, you know, with all these new stadiums, you're kind of curious to see, oh, like what kind of new fancy –
true.
Schmancy press box food might they have. I guess we'll see, though. Curious to check that out.
Yeah, yeah. The best.
There was something you loved in the Georgia Dome
the
press box,
right?
The best
bread pudding I've ever had in my life was at the Georgia Dome, actually, believe it or not. I mean, you know, you would think New Orleans. We go to New Orleans all the time. And I'm not necessarily a huge bread pudding person, but again, free dessert. I'm going to give it a shot.
Of course.
And that was individually one of the best desserts I've had in my life. So
that's quite a statement.
It is, right? I can't believe I'm saying it myself. I mean, bread pudding, really?
Yep. But I will say this about you, though. I can't tell you how many times I've heard you like come into the office, put your bag down, and say, "I just had the best blank of my life."
Right.
Like you do have the best of your life a
I
lot.
Do. Yeah.
And that doesn't. I mean, there are a lot of different things out there. So
right.
Like, you could see somebody having a lot of really great things, but you just say that quite a bit.
And I think I've said it about something else in Atlanta, and this is interesting. Fat Matt's, remember going to
that was our used to be our spot down there.
Yeah, that was my favorite rib I'd ever had. But you know, I don't know. Maybe sometimes you just burn out on something because we kind of went away from that. This place called Fox Brothers that had a little more variety of barbecue that was strong, right?
Yeah,
great.
We had some good queue down.
Great side. So have you been to the Varsity before? That's probably the place that people first talk about when they talk about Atlanta food.
Yep, that's without a doubt. Like the Atlanta kind of just hallmark spot when it comes to food. I've never been, but I know you've got some takes on the Varsity. So
it's like the world's, I don't know if it's actually literally the biggest. It's kind of touted as the biggest fast food place. I mean, it's like two levels. It's pretty crazy. You know, they have people that have worked there for a zillion years and, you know, they take your order in a, you know, they're kind of like rude when they take your order type of thing. It's like their shtick. They have all this stuff.
Not the only place that has that.
And so I was excited about going. Like, hey, this is awesome. I think it's open 24 hours, too. I'm not sure. Can you check that, Jared? You don't have to check that. it wasn't very good. But for me, that's the thing that happens with food and other things. It's the expectations. Like, all this buildup. Like, oh, the Varsity. Yeah. It's the Varsity. You know, then I went back a couple years later just because it was convenient, even though, like, it was like, it wasn't very good the first
time. 24 hours.
Not 24 hours. Okay, I exaggerated. So I go back the second time. I'm like, oh, this isn't bad, you know, because my expectations were low.
It's a big factor in all this, for sure. In this in this food discussion we always have, like if, you know, if somebody tells you about how amazing this is and it's the best you'll ever have, you go in, of course, expecting that first bite to be somewhat life-changing, that it's going to be, this is going to literally like knock me off my feet, it's going to be that good, and that's very hard to live up
to. So it's better to be the person that like discovers the thing in the first place, because you're going in with no expectations.
And along those same lines, I also feel like that first experience at a place generally is the best. You know, a lot of times that second or third time back, it's like, oh, it's just not as good as that time we came here, you know. And I don't know what it is about that but so, it's another food take.
I think there's a lesson in here for food for thought and food and thought for life, really, Max, is that the way to live your life is with low expectations.
It's a lower expectation.
Right? You know? And then you're pleasantly surprised.
That's pretty funny.
You know, I'm pretty sure, you know, I'm just going to say the Panthers, like, I mean, they have no chance in the playoffs. So that'll be my expectation level. And then, you know, Super Bowl 52, here we come.
I should just make that the podcast headline for this week. Panthers have no chance in the playoffs. That'll be, I think people will click on that. What the hell?
Yeah. That could work. I like it.
All right. Speaking of expectations, what do you expect Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about, you know, the Panthers' motivation first. I mean, that's a big factor what the Falcons are playing for, no doubt. But they, you know, they've been playing for their season for weeks now, and, you know, they didn't get the job done in New Orleans. They barely beat the Buccaneers the week before that in Atlanta. I think it was in Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
So, you know.
No, that was it.
I don't remember where that was.
All I know was, yeah, field goal.
It came down to a field goal, and I'm drawing a blank. Yeah, maybe it wasn't. But whatever the case, like, I mean, I expect Atlanta's best because of what's on the line. But what is Atlanta's best this year? I mean, they have not been able to be consistent, and that's why they're in the position they are.
Yeah, look, Atlanta just has never seemingly been able to recapture what they had last year. I mean, the Panthers know that all too well, just, you know, not just quite having it the same way everybody expected. They got a lot of the same pieces. It's like, okay, where's all the big passing numbers and all the points? And just kind of hasn't happened. Of course, the Falcons would like to see that change in Week 17 and finally kind of catch some fire here. But, you know, we always talk about these division games and the rivalry. And one thing we haven't really talked about as it pertains to this matchup is, don't you think from the Panthers' perspective, even a guy like Thomas Davis coming back up the suspension, wouldn't they take some enjoyment in making sure the Falcons don't get into the playoffs?
Absolutely.
Don't you think that would be something? So for a guy like TD going back into Georgia, which is always a big game for a number of guys on this Panthers roster, to come off suspension, you know he's going to be geared up.
Yeah.
I just wonder, too, you know, that's another part of this, too, is we can keep these guys. There's that hatred, that competitive hatred in this division, especially this rivalry. We've talked about the games over the past few years between these two teams. I think the Panthers would like to make sure that they could tell the Falcons, no, we're going to the playoffs and you're not.
Right, and they have a history of having that type of success. It seems like the last game of the season, that's the other thing, all those games we went through, the majority of them were the last game of the season with something on the line. Obviously, Cam Newton, Atlanta area guy, he loves playing down there. I think they would want nothing more than to be able to do that. And, I think they may do it again. The Falcons, we'll just see what Falcons team shows up. But I think the Panthers are going to show up because of all these factors we talked about.
I think so, too. Yeah, I think so, too. All righty. Well, everybody, of course, looking forward to Week 17 and beyond as the playoffs are fast approaching. Thanks for joining us on the Panthers podcast. We'll see you again next time.